So first, I just want to say thank you so much for inviting me to present at your seminars. And good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining me. And thank you for the introduction. Let's see. I've been working a long time at the Center for Obesity Research, which is located in the mid region of Norway. It's a center where we do innovation and research within the fields of overweight and obesity. And I've been working with many different projects, as you can see some of them here. For example, I've been working with the prevention and treatment of obesity, overweight and obesity among children and young people, as well as research on adults. For example, on new treatment methods. And lately, I've also conducted research, as Sophia said, on diet and nutrition for people with intellectual disabilities. And I've just coordinated and delivered a stage one application for EU funding within this topic. So hopefully, we will go to stage two. We cross our fingers. And now I'm also a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Agder in Norway at Center for eHealth. So today I will present findings from a project called COMPASS. This research was recently published in the journal Children and Society. And the aim of that research was to gain better understanding of why there is a higher prevalence of overweight and obesity in rural areas in Norway. So the project, it had a social science approach and was funded by the Norwegian Research Council. It consisted of several work packages focusing on obesity and rurality, and one of the work packages focused on gaining insight into children's perspectives of a rural diet. And today I will present the results from that study. So here you see the research team. Tanya Plasil, she's a social anthropologist like me and works alongside me at the Center for Obesity Research at St. Olav's Hospital. And Reidun Heggem, she used to work at Institute for Rural and Regional Research at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology, and she has a PhD in rural sociology. So, I will start the presentation by giving you a short introduction of the background for the project. So, although it is a widespread notion that urbanization is one of the most important drivers of the global rise in obesity, research shows that more than 55% of the global rise in BMI between 1985 and 2017 was due to increases in BMI in rural areas. And this is also true for Norway, where we see that overweight and obesity are more prevalent in rural municipalities, but very little is known why this is so. So several explanation models have been proposed to try to explain this rural-urban difference, but it has not been empirically examined. Like, for example, that people living in rural areas, they have lower income and education levels, which correlates with unhealthy lifestyles, or that a rural body image differs from urban, that rural areas have culture count, bound eating patterns with country cooking, which is characterized by large portions and more calorie-rich food. And that there have been changes in the nature of physical farm work and an increase in car use. So, to gain more insight into explanations for this rural-urban difference, our aim was to explore children's views on their diet in relation to culture, identity, and tradition in their everyday lives. In total, 46 graders, 11 to 12 years of age, participated in the study, and they represented seven schools in two different rural municipalities in mid-Norway. One was coastal and one was inland. Regarding methods used, we were inspired by participatory methods often used within the framework of childhood studies, which strives to do research with rather than on children. And we developed the methods in collaboration with 10 master students during a course titled Experts in Teamwork at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. So the students, they received lectures about important topics relating to public health, and they got a kind of a crash course in childhood studies, including participatory methods that are commonly used within this approach. So supervised by the research team, four methods were developed. The first involved warming up exercises for both children and the master students. And these exercises were specifically outlined to try to minimize the power imbalance between child participants and the adult master students, and to actively involve the children in problem solving. So first we had a name game to learn each other's names, and then we had a knot game to tune in on problem solving, and finally a diet preference game that set the stage for the workshop theme. So the secondary participatory methods we called the refrigerator task. And during this task, the children were divided into four groups. Two of these were assigned to fill a refrigerator for a typical urban family, and two for a typical rural family. So they were given a big sketch of an empty fridge, as well as pictures of different food items, and they were also asked to draw missing food items if need be. So after finishing, the children had a brief and informal presentation of their urban and rural refrigerators, and a discussion of similarities and differences between them. So this task was aimed at providing insight into the children's conceptions of urban and rural diets, as well as what food items the children were used to seeing in the refrigerator in their home. And the third method was a word cloud exercise. The children were then given post-it notes and asked to fill out one for each person or actor involved in teaching them about food. All post-it notes were put on a board and followed by a discussion. And then a word cloud was made of the words that were mentioned the most times during the discussion, but also on their post-it notes. The fourth method was the food wheel. The children were handed out individual food wheels, which in practice was a drawing of a 24-hour dial, and asked to try to recall and register their food intake last Thursday and Saturday. And finally, they discussed the different food wheels. It was the master students that were responsible for the implementation of the workshop. For each group of children, the master students had chosen a student moderator. And the other students were responsible for logistics, answering questions that children might have, and for asking the children relevant follow-up questions alongside the moderator. In collaboration with us, the researchers, the student also developed backup questions associated with different exercises. And these questions were not asked systematically, since we had instructed the students about the importance to follow the lead of the children and ask them relevant questions, allowing for a more natural conversation to take place. The research group that all has extensive experience in writing ethnographic data observed and took field notes during workshops. So our data consisted of the material produced by the children and ethnographic field notes produced by us, the researchers. And when analyzing data, we used multiple modes of data and focused on the potential relationship between them. And thematic analysis was used for analyzing data. So in the following, I will now present the results from this study, and I will present the results according to the main participatory methods used during the workshops, namely the refrigerator task, the word cloud, and the food wheel. So we will start with the findings from the refrigerator task. So if you see my slides, you will see two pictures we took of a rural fridge and an urban fridge, which was produced by the children. And at first glance, they might look quite similar, but we got very interesting data from the children's discussions while making them, as well as from their plenum discussions afterwards. In their discussions, we noticed that the children repeatedly associated the urban refrigerator with something modern, while the rural with the traditional or the past. And this modern traditional dichotomy seemed to be the main way for them to communicate urban versus rural differences. We also identified the use of several related sub dichotomies. They talked about fast food versus slow food, light food products versus real food products, and messy fridges versus tidy fridges. The urban fridges represented modern times, being stacked with fast food and light products, and were perceived as messy inside. The rural fridges represented the past, something traditional and old-fashioned, by containing slow food and what they referred to as real food products, as well as being tidy. During this exercise, a child uttered, "Well, if we are 1996, they are 2040." And by we, he was talking about the rural inhabitants, and they referred to urban people. And then another child stated, "But that's okay, isn't it?" And he replied, "Yeah, that's what I'm saying," indicating that he was quite comfortable with living in the past. There was also a clear connection with traditional food in the way the children stacked the rural refrigerator. They tended to fill it with food items signifying slow food or slow cooking, such as gravlaks, which is a traditional Nordic salmon dish cured with a combination of salt and sugar. They also stacked it with sod, which is a traditional Norwegian soup made with cooked mutton and meatballs made with lamb or beef. They also stacked it with dark bread, cream, dairy butter, potatoes, egg, cakes, and waffles. And waffles was, they explained it that they should have waffles in the fridge in case of unexpected visits by family, friends, or neighbors. They also put milk from the tank at the farm. And lots of meat. They stated that we eat lots of meat, for example, real cooked ham or elk from hunting. In contrast, the children tended to fill the urban fridges with international dishes like sushi or falafel or other takeaway dishes, many ultra-processed foods, chicken fillet, energy drinks, and new soda brands, all of them signifying modern and fast foods. They connected such food and food products to urban settings due to easier access to grocery shops and claimed that urban shops had more products to choose from. The connection of food to urban settings was also made through time spent on cooking. And here are some quotes from the children. "There is a lot of fast food in the cities. They eat fast food because they want to get it done quickly. They don't make food from scratch in the cities. City people are a bit lazy. The perception of city people as lazy and not preparing food from scratch was contrary to their perception of the rural way for making food. That is, that people cook from scratch. This was exemplified, among other things, in a discussion about potatoes, which are a main ingredient in the traditional Norwegian diet. They said, city people don't eat a lot of potatoes. It's too time consuming to make. They also stated that city folk eat ready baked bread, while we, meaning rural people, eat whole wheat bread, implying that they make their own bread. The children's notions of urban or modern versus rural traditional food habits were also connected to the use of light products in urban areas and real food products in rural areas. For example, they stated that they did not think that city folk use real sour cream, but light sour cream. Real food products were considered commodities like meat, that is often meat butchered at a farm or obtained through hunting. They also talked about milk, cream, and sour cream, and they seemed to agree that such foods should be as little processed as possible. One of the children stated that in the countryside, we drink milk straight from the milk tank. Another illustrating example is when the children discussed what butter to put in the fridge, where one of the children pointed out that they needed to put real man's butter in the fridge, meaning butter made from cream instead of margarine, which is made from oil. The children also talked about messy and dirty fridges in urban areas, in opposition to tidy and clean fridges in rural areas. They said things like, they have messy fridges. They come from the city. They do not bother to clean. The children also considered the urban fridges to contain very unhealthy food. Our finding from this task showed that the children associate rural finding fridges with and diet with traditional food, preferably obtained through local farming or hunting, and food good for slow cooking. Urban modern fridges were described as dirty, unhealthy, and full of fast food. Rural fridges, on the other hand, were described as clean and containing healthy foods. And such perceived dichotomous differences were also linked to differences in how rural versus urban people lived their lives. The children's discourses revealed that they perceived urban people not to know where their food comes from, claiming that city people are lazy, in a hurry, they make fast food and buy their food at grocery stores. Our findings from this first task also suggest that the children did not agree on certain public health messages put forward by the Norwegian Directorate of Health. For example, that people should eat less red meat and more fish, that one should use oil and margarine instead of butter, and eat lean rather than fatty dairy products. Instead, the children communicating that they eated real man's butter, red meat, and no fish, and real products, no light products. This indicates that the children rejected public health messages in favor of their rural food identity or their rural identity and ways of living. As we will see in the following word cloud task, the children's discourses further support our finding in how the children used food to communicate their rural identity. So over to the exercise, the word cloud. During this exercise, the children were giving post-it notes and were asked to fill out one for each person or actor involved in teaching them about food. This task was followed by a discussion among the children. On their post-it notes, the children had registered mother and school as the most important actors in educating them about food. Regarding school, the children repeatedly wrote down and talked about the national compulsory subject, food and health. This is a subject aimed at teaching children the relationship between diet and health. It promotes public health food and interest in the diversity of foods and meal customs in Norwegian society, and aims at helping children implement a healthy diet. The children shared that during these classes, they were taught to make food from recipes and then we eat it. Several emphasized that they learned how to bake cakes. This might indicate that rural teachers see it as an important tradition for rural children to learn. The children also told us that they learned how to make different traditional rural dishes. We also asked children if they learned anything about nutrition in the subject food and health, but the children got quite flustered by the question and answered in vague terms. Our impression was that they were more concerned about sharing with us what food dishes they had made rather than what they had learned about nutrition. We also asked them if they liked to cook in general, and several responded yes, but only a few raised their hands when asking if they were helping with the cooking at home. In general, they stated that they did not want to be more involved in cooking, whether they normally were helping out or not. And this might suggest that the Norwegian rural tradition to involve especially girls in cooking at an early age to give them cooking skills as adults is fading. From the task, it was clear that mothers had the biggest role alongside the subject of food and health to teach the children about food. All children had noted mother on their post-it note. They stated that they were taught by their mothers how to make elk tenderloin, cakes, steaks, and traditional soups. This is also in line with the insight we obtained during the refrigerator task, where the children were asked whether there are foods that are typical for their rural area, to which the children replied, "There is a lot of meat." According to the children, the fathers did the hunting and the mothers did the cooking. Again, the children emphasized local food traditions and access to real food obtained by hunting when elaborating on the mother's teaching about food. And this supports our findings in the refrigerator task on how the children use food to communicate their rural identity and to distance themselves from urban people and ways of living and eating. And one child explained it like this: "We run outside and hunt for food, and you guys hunt in the city." Furthermore, the children had written grandmothers, aunts and uncles, dad, friends, television and commercials and social media on their post-it notes, but they did not elaborate much on their roles in teaching them about food in this exercise. To sum up, the children again displayed their conceptions of rural foodways in their discourses and highlighting cake baking and the making of local traditional food dishes when talking about who teaches them about food. Only a few children replied that they were helping out at home, making food, and the children also stated that they did not want to be more involved. As mentioned, this might suggest that involving children, especially girls, in cooking is a fading practice. But we also believe it indicates a change in rural food practices towards more urban ones, as we will see in the final exercise, the food wheel. The aim of the food wheel was to gain detailed insight into the children's diets. All children were asked to fill out two different food wheels for what they had eaten last Thursday and Saturday. The children recorded both the hour of the day and the content of their meals and snacks. And even though many children stated that they found it quite difficult to remember what they had eaten, we found some similarities when analyzing their food wheels. For example, few ate breakfast before school. We also found that many ate potato chips and other snacks in between meals, also on weekdays. On Saturdays, which is a day of the week that in Norway, where children are traditionally allowed to eat sweets, the children only registered that they ate breakfast, dinner, and then snacks, and no other meals. We gained additional information about the children's diets during their discussions about their food wheels. Initially, the children had clear ideas about what should be eaten on a Thursday versus a Saturday. Sweets and candy were associated with Saturdays, whereas Thursdays were associated with everyday food. And on the weekends, they stated to eat beef and tenderloin. And this reflects the Norwegian tradition of eating moderately on weekdays and more abundantly on weekends. However, when looking closely at their wheels, the children themselves discovered that they often ate potato chips, sweets, and other snacks during the week. And some claimed to be allowed to buy a candy bag of 3 kilos every Saturday, which is about 11,000 calories. In general, the children agreed that there was not much difference between weekdays and weekends regarding the intake of candy and sweets. In one of the municipalities, the children were asked how often they ate frozen ready-made pizza, even though no one had registered pizza on their food bills. 4 children replied that they hardly ever ate pizza, and 1 child claimed to eat pizza once a week, but the rest of the children, which was about 15 children, told us that they ate pizza 2 to 3 times a week. Many also stated that they ate pizza when going to a local restaurant. Tacos was also mentioned as a favorite dish by many during their discussions, even though this dish was totally missing from all the food wheels. The children were also asked if they ate dessert every day. And first, they stated that this was only done occasionally, but this led to a discussion amongst the children about the rural practice of eating cakes and pastries. So I will give you now an example from a discussion. So child one says, "My mom sometimes bake cakes during weekends." And then child two says, "But your mom bakes all the time." And child one starts to laugh. And then child three says, "My grandmother bakes constantly. She has four freezers full." Child four says, "If I want something good to eat, I go to my grandparents." So many children shared how they often visited their grandmother and that she often served them something sweet. They said things like, "Grandmother has cake. My grandmother has pancake batter in the fridge so we can make pancakes. I get buns or waffles from grandma. Dad sometimes brings stuff from grandma because she bakes all the time." It seems that grandmothers were generally associated with giving sweet treats to the children. So during the food wheel task, it became clear that there was a discrepancy between what the children initially presented as their eating habits and what they actually ate. Especially when seen in connection to the two other tasks, we found that there was a difference between what we call imaginary food ways of the children and their day-to-day reality. And our results suggest that the children's imaginary food ways were used to maintain and/or strengthen their rural identity. In addition, these imaginary food ways involved a rejection of certain public health messages because those were seen as belonging to the urban sphere. So, to conclude, the children displayed imagined rather than actual food ways to maintain and/or strengthen their rural identity. The notion of imagined food ways we use, it builds on the sociological concept of imagined communities by Benedict Anderson, and food ways is a sociological concept used for explaining cultural and territorial gaps between actual and imagined dietary patterns in a rural population. Food ways connect people through the consumption of food, which then comes to represent people's shared experiences of cultural identity and history. And also, imagination is an important source of community, according to Anderson, connecting people across time and space. And imaginary foodways hence corresponds to food-related practices among various members of a population that emerge through their representations and geographical imaginary. So, where food has been grown, caught, or raised has changed dramatically with the entry of commercial foods worldwide. Still, the children's imaginary foodways seems to rely on representations of a closeness to nature and a history of farming and hunting. In contrast, they perceive urban people to eat unhealthy, global, and ultra-processed foods of which they do not know the origin. Our findings suggest that the rural children ate a more calorie-dense diet than urban children due to a combination of a traditional rural and an industrial urban diet, thereby adding insights into how cultural conceptions of food might affect food intake and the prevalence of overweight and obesity in rural areas. Our research suggests that the children's imaginary foodways includes a rejection of health and nutrition recommendations. We therefore believe that obesity-related messages put forward by healthcare workers might be perceived as an attack on rural identity and way of life, and actually undermine healthcare workers' effort to treat and prevent childhood obesity. Therefore, in this article, we call for a more dynamic and contextualized health policy regarding child obesity that takes rural culture and experience into account. I think I will stop there, and thank you so much for your time and attention.